Chapter 25. Seeking the treasure. They all stared at the strange sight. It was rather odd to see the entire middle portion of the table going around, while the outer part, at which the adventurers sat, was stationary. But the boys and men, with the exception of Washington, recognized it as very convenient. "What are you frightened at, Wash?" asked Jack. "At that table, that's what. It's a ghostest table."
"A ghost table?"
"Yep. Spirits am working on it. It's going back to the ship, where I can move things for myself."
"Don't be alarmed," said Mr. Henderson.
"It's all right, Washington. The table moves by some hidden mechanism, which doubtless was set in motion by the Martian who were just here, or the mere sitting down to our places may have started it." They all got up to make an examination, and the table center at once ceased revolving, proving that some connection existed between it and the chairs. But they could not discover the machinery. There was a small metal box underneath the table, but that was all. "That must contain some of that marvelous red substance which gives light, heat and power," declared Mr. Rauman. "I must certainly get a supply of it. In fact, that is what I came to Mars for. That is the object of my trip, and if we can get a sufficient quantity of it, our fortunes are made."
"Is it so valuable?" asked Mark.
"It is the most valuable treasure in the universe," replied the German. "Long ago I suspected some such thing must exist on Mars, or else how, receiving only half the light and heat from the sun that we receive, can the inhabitants exist? And that they do live, and live well, we have seen. It must be due to the red substance, and if we could only get some back to Earth it would be worth millions. Think of simply putting a bit of it in a stove and having heat, or hanging up some in a room, and getting light from it. But, more than this, think of having it move machinery. I would not be surprised, but what I could transform it into energy that would operate the motors of the Annihilator."
"But wouldn't you need a new supply every once in a while?" asked Jack.
"I think not. I believe it is like radium, and will last forever. In fact, you notice that the metal boxes it is contained in, except the ones in the boats, are securely sealed. If they had to be putting in a fresh supply every so often, they would make the boxes, so they would open more easily. We must get some of that treasure."
"But how?"
inquired Mr. Henderson.
"I don't know, but I will find out a way. When we have been here a few weeks we will be better acquainted with the Martians and their language, and can make a search.
Well, if you folks is done talking about treasure, I'm going to eat," observed old Andy.
"I'm hungry."
"So am I," added Jack, and as they all sat down again the table began revolving. They found it a convenient arrangement once the novelty had worn off, and they were soon eagerly talking, over the meal, of the wonders they had seen, and speculating on what might be before them. Washington, having nothing to do, went to see about beds for the night, as the travelers were tired.
"Well, Wash," asked Jack, as the colored man returned, "did you find the beds making themselves, or waltzing around the room?"
"Nope, they seem to be ordinary, respectable beds. But I ain't going to take no chances in them. It's going to sleep on the floor."
"Why?"
"Cause I don't want to wake up in the middle of the night and find myself squashed into a jellyfish. I believe the bed's am bewitched same as the table is."
"Nonsense," said Jack.
"They're all right. Place to live. They found the beds good to sleep in, and nothing disturbed them."
Washington, however, stretched out on the floor, and he arose early to prepare breakfast on the stove, which never needed to have a fire built in it, because of the marvelous red substance. By an arrangement of levers and valves the heat could be increased or diminished at pleasure. The same Martian who had conducted the travelers to the house returned soon after breakfast, and by signs and motions indicated to them that the crazy machinist left in the projectile had been properly cared for. The Martian also indicated to the world dwellers that they were free to go where they pleased about the city, which they learned was called Martopolis, and was the largest city on the planet. We'll take a walk, suggested Mr. Rauman, and maybe we can find where they keep the red stuff, or where they get it from. They strolled about the streets of Martopolis, noting many strange sights. The queer little people were hurrying to and fro, with a peculiar gliding motion, much faster than the ordinary walk, yet it was not a run. The peculiar lightness in weight of everything on Mars probably accounted for this, as the travelers themselves found they could move about very swiftly, and with little fatigue. Nor did the world dwellers attract as much attention as they expected they would. The Martians appeared to have satisfied their curiosity regarding the strangers the previous night, and now gave them but passing glances. Even the boys did not follow them. Everyone seemed to be busy, and the travelers noted many schools, in which the children were industriously studying, though it was early morning. Observatories, with great telescopes, were numerous, and astronomers were gazing at the sun, or different parts of the heavens, even in daylight. They are a very learned people, and they never seem to cease from acquiring information, commented Mr. Henderson. Well, I'd like to acquire some information about where that red stuff is, said the German. There is one of the metal boxes that contain some, up on that pole. He pointed to one, that evidently served as a street lamp at night. And there's a policeman near it, said Jack. Ask him. A Martian stood leaning against the light pole, much as does an officer of the law on Earth. That he was some sort of an official, was evidenced by the uniform he wore. Mr. Rauman approached the Martian, and made signs that he would like to see the light box. The officer shook his head vigorously, and said something rapidly. I guess they don't allow strangers to touch it, observed Jack. Evidently not, admitted Mr. Rauman. I wonder if he knows where it comes from. He made more signs, asking, as well as he could, where the substance in the box was obtained. The officer pointed to the distant hills, but again shook his head in protest, and spoke for some time very earnestly, as if warning his questioner not to venture after it. Guess they must guard it pretty closely, said Mark. Well, I'm going to have some, anyhow, declared the German. We'll take a stroll over toward the hills. They passed through the city, no one offering to stop them. On every side they observed something new or strange, and they were particularly struck by the absence of all noise. Everything was done silently. There were no trolley cars, no wagons or trucks, no puffing automobiles, and no confusion. The Martians moved noiselessly about, and the sleds, with their queer motive power, made no sound. They seemed to be the only vehicles in use, save the boats, and these sleds were of many sizes, some as large as big trucks. Do you think it will be safe to leave the projectile so long? Asked Jack. I think so, replied Mr. Rauman. These people will not bother with it. In fact, they all seem too busy. Some of that valuable red stuff. They kept on, until they found themselves out of the city, and into the country districts. Here there was more water than land, great canals and lakes being scattered here and there, with narrow paths or roads winding in and out among them. It's always flood time here, observed Jack. We must get one of those boats. They approached the hills, which seemed to rise out of a great lake. There is where the treasure is. In those hills, said Mr. Rauman. They are not more than a mile off. And get some. They came to a narrow strip of land connecting two lakes, and as they were crossing it, there suddenly appeared from a little hut, about halfway over, several Martians, who opposed their progress. Through space to Mars by Rockwood.